This is World Lutheran News Digest. ഇത് ലോക ലൂത്രൻ വാർത്താ പരിപാടിയാകുന്നു.
I'm World Lutheran News Digest host Kip Allen. Militant Islam is not a new phenomenon. It's been on the world scene for 1400 years since the founding of that religion. The world is witnessing its latest outbreak in the Middle East, and for a while, there was hope that the upheavals heralded a new era, what some called an Arab Spring. It didn't turn out that way. Author and frequent critic of militant Islam, Robert Spencer, discusses this in his latest book, The Arab Winter Comes to America. Change in the Middle East started in 2010 as popular movements overthrew dictators and monarchs in the Arab world. Western leaders greeted the change as Arab Spring in the hope that the old authoritarian regimes would be replaced by democracies. But instead of democracies, militant Islamic fundamentalists seized powers in many countries. Robert Spencer, author and outspoken critic of militant Islam, says the West is in denial about the threat. He says this is especially true of President Obama regarding the Islamic State, which has risen in Syria and Iraq.
Barack Obama said that the Islamic State had nothing to do with Islam and did not represent any religion. This is the same denial and the same willful ignorance that the book is all about.
Spencer says official policy of the United States is that the Muslim religion has nothing to do with the rise of violence committed in its name.
We have a administration in the United States today that is committed as a matter of policy to denying that Islam has anything to do with the violence committed in its name all over the world. And this kind of policy is dangerous.
This policy is dangerous on a number of levels, he says.
It's misleading, it's wrong, it's false, it's willfully ignorant, and above all, it prevents us from being able to deal properly with the jihad threat, because you cannot defeat an enemy you do not understand.
Spencer says that despite claims to the opposite, forced conversion and subjugation of non-Muslims is part of that religion.
Other than that, all the main schools and sects of Islam, all the various schools of law, and the various groups, even the Sufis, teach warfare against unbelievers and the necessity ultimately to subjugate unbelievers under the rule of Islamic law.
Well, Spencer recognizes that most Muslims do not adhere to the philosophy of war against non-Muslims. Those who do are on solid Islamic theological ground.
Other than that, all the main schools and sects of Islam, all the various schools of law, and the various groups, even the Sufis, teach warfare against unbelievers and the necessity ultimately to subjugate unbelievers under the rule of Islamic law.
Spencer says that many of the Islamic groups operating in the United States are linked to the radical Muslim Brotherhood. He says these groups are responsible for the term Islamophobia, which is used to silence opposition.
Islamophobia is a word that was popularized by Muslim Brotherhood organizations in the United States, particularly the International Institute of Islamic Thought and the Council on American Islamic Relations, groups that are linked to Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood.
It's a tactic that is part and parcel of jihad, according to Spencer.
It's a tactic that is used to silence all the critics of Islamic jihad so as to clear away all the obstacles to the advance of that jihad.
He says this tactic has been extremely effective.
And what the idea of it is to intimidate people into thinking that there's something wrong with resisting jihad terrorism, that it's bigoted and racist and hateful to oppose jihad violence. And they want to make people ashamed of doing so. And it's really been remarkably successful.
In fact, Spencer has been barred from travel to the United Kingdom because of his public statements about Islam and violence.
When I was planning to go back in 2013, I was banned by the UK Home Office, and they sent that said that I was not allowed to come into the country because I spoke about how Islam had a doctrine of violence and warfare against unbelievers.
Spencer says that the British government apparently applied a different set of rules for a Muslim cleric who preaches violence against non-Muslims.
Ironically, the week before that I was supposed to go into Britain along with my colleague Pamela Geller, the British authorities admitted into the country a man named Mohammed Al-Arifi, who is a Saudi sheikh who has said that jihad involves the smashing of skulls and the tearing of infidels limb from limb, and that this is an honor to the believers.
Spencer says he believes that many law enforcement and intelligence people are aware of the danger, but are being hampered by pressure from above.
I mean, see, the problem is that you have this official denial that's right up at the top. And so while there are many mid-level people in government and law enforcement who know what's up, who know what the problem is, and who are deeply committed to protecting Americans and defending Americans from this problem, at the same time, they're stymied by their superiors.
Although governmental intelligence bodies, such as the National Security Agency, have the technical capability to monitor suspect groups, policy prevents them, according to Spencer.
And, of course, all the scandal about the NSA surveillance and the fact that everything, you know, every phone call and every email is being looked at the same time as mosques are being specifically exempted from any kind of surveillance, because that would be Islamophobic. It's ridiculous. You're taking the place that would be the most likely source for this kind of activity and ruling it out as being one place that's off limits.
One group that has enormous influence in American affairs, according to Spencer, is the Council on American-Islamic Relations, known as CARE.
They're a Hamas-linked Muslim Brotherhood front group. They're the leading Islamic organization in the United States. They're the go-to organization for media that wants quotes about some issue regarding Islam. They are very influential in the Obama administration.
CARE has condemned Islamic violence in the past, but Spencer says he believes the condemnation is only for Western consumption.
They don't deal with the fact that the Islamic State makes a case on Islamic grounds for what it does. They never refute the case that the Islamic State makes. They just say, well, we condemn this, and it seems as if it's more for Western consumption, because they don't say anything that would actually convince somebody who believed in the Islamic State to change his mind.
CARE is one of the most prominent groups on the Middle East in the United States. Media and government officials are often advised by them.
And that is just absolutely not on the radar screen for any American officials. And that's what's just so ridiculous about this. They assume that there is no deception, that these people can be taken entirely at face value, even though CARE has been named an unindicted co-conspirator in a Hamas terror funding case, even though CARE is a Muslim Brotherhood organization and the Brotherhood is dedicated, in its own words, to eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within, even though several CARE officials have been arrested and convicted of terrorism-related activity.
Spencer has some harsh words for the American media.
All these things never seem to register with the mainstream media that consistently quotes CARE officials and identifies CARE as a civil rights organization without ever mentioning the arrests, the co-conspirator status, the ties to the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas, nothing. And this is deceiving the American people, and it's dangerous in many ways, particularly because of CARE's influence in the U.S. government.
Spencer says the ultimate goal of these groups is imposition of Islamic or Sharia law on everyone, although CARE denies this.
And see, Sharia is an integral part of Islam. And of course the Islamic supremacist groups like CARE have every intention of bringing Islamic law here. There's just no doubt about that whatsoever. But they can't say that openly to the American people, because obviously Islamic law involves the beheadings, the stonings, the amputations, all these things, the systematic denial of rights of women and non-Muslims. And so they can't front for that. They have to obfuscate and deceive.
The Arab Spring is turning into winter worldwide. The rise of groups such as the Islamic State, with its beheading of American journalists, mass murder of surrendered soldiers, taking Yazidi women as sex slaves, and destruction of Christian communities, is just the latest example. And these extremists claim, and may well believe, that they are committing these crimes for God. Jesus warned us this would happen in the book of John, chapter 16, verse 2, when he said, "Indeed, the hour is coming when whoever kills you will think he is offering service to God." Kip Allen, World Lutheran News Digest.
This is World Lutheran News Digest.
World Lutheran News Digest will be back right after these messages.
There's a special place where rare books from times long ago come alive in your imagination. A special place where you can rediscover values that transcend time itself. A special place of adventure, mystery, and drama that's both old and new at the same time. Lamplighter Theater.
Saturday mornings at 11 on KFUO Radio. Hi, I'm Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from Ascension Lutheran in St. Louis.
And I am Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky from St. Paul's in New Athens and Trinity in Darmstadt, and we welcome you to listen to Wrestling with the Basics.
Matt, let go of me, man! No, it's not real wrestling. We're just talking about Bible issues.
No.
Oh, 9:05 Saturday mornings, 8:50 a.m. KFUO.
Hi, Craig D'Onofrio here. I want to invite you to join me Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. for Reformation Rush Hour. We'll have some of today's most interesting and intelligent people on the show. We'll talk about news that affects your faith. We'll look at the world around you and talk about how it interacts with Christianity. And we'll have a good time doing it all. This is the fastest hour in radio as you drive home Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. right after Issues Etc. on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listening to Worldwide KFUO on the go with your smartphone doesn't mean you have to walk around with earbuds all day. You can Bluetooth across the room to a speaker system in your home or listen on radios that have built-in smartphone cradles. There are many easy ways to listen to WorldwideKFUO.org on the air, online, and on demand. We proclaim the clear gospel message of Christ crucified for our sins. The messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.
Hi, I'm Pastor William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship. Jesus said some hard things in John 6, and lots of his disciples turned away and stopped following him. He asked the 12 if they wanted to go too. Peter responded for them all, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." Words of eternal life, those are the words your Jesus has for you. Join me for the next broadcast of Thy Strong Word, 11 a.m. Central on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Hi, I'm Pastor Ted Lesh, pastor at Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church in North St. Louis County, inviting you to listen to our KFUO radio worship broadcasts on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. Active worship, preaching, music, and singing are part of every one of our services at Chapel. Join us Sunday nights at 6. It's one more broadcast worship opportunity for you from your friends at Chapel of the Cross and KFUO Radio.
Usted está escuchando el resumen de noticias Mundo Luterano. This is World Lutheran News Digest.
I'm World Lutheran News Digest host Kip Allen. Westerners in general, and Americans in particular, often do not understand Islam. It's one of the three main monotheistic religions, along with Christianity and Judaism. It shares some similarities with the other two, but there are many more and very significant differences. World Lutheran News Digest's Andy Bates discusses these differences and similarities with author and lecturer Dr. Timothy Fashion, an expert in Islamic history.
We're going to talk about Islam, the appeal of Islam to youth. Why? What would be so appealing about Islam to youth, especially to young men, particularly in the Middle East? Joining me by phone today, Dr. Timothy Furnish. He has a PhD in Islamic history from The Ohio State University. Tell us a little bit about, tell us about your background, your experience. You do a number of things today, working as a writer, a blogger, a consultant to the U.S. military. Tell us about your background and what drew you to that interest of studying Islamic history?
Well, a lot of it was serendipitous or divine. I'm not sure which one. I graduated from undergraduate and went to law school, and I hated it so bad I quit and joined the Army. And I wound up, this was back in the 80s when most of us, I went into Army intelligence and wanted to get a language and signed up for a language. And I was hoping to get Russian, of course. This was the height of the Cold War. And for some strange reason, I was the only person in my intelligence class that got Arabic.
Where does the history of Islam begin?
It's akin to Judaism and Christianity in many ways. It's a monotheistic religion. It is not. Sometimes you'll see these typologies where Judaism and Christianity are posited as Western religions and Islam as an Eastern religion, but that's not true at all. In many ways, it draws upon heretical movements within Christianity. There's a lot in the Quran that resembles things that show up in books that didn't make it into the New Testaments, for instance, the Gospel of Thomas and some of the apocryphal books. But when Muhammad came along in the 7th century, his death date is usually given as 632 A.D., that he basically had come into contact with Jews, particularly Christians in the Arabian Peninsula and environs, and then sort of cobbled together out of that a religion that in some ways resembles Judaism, Christianity, but in many other ways it's quite different. It's very clear that a considerable number of things in the Quran are almost verbatim, translation being allowed into Arabic, verbatim takings or borrowings from some of the apocryphal so-called apocryphal gospels. I do not think the Quran is evil. There is a lot in the Quran that is violent, that is misogynistic, clearly. And I've done a lot of talks and lectures and over the last 6 months over this issue of beheading, because ISIS, mm-hmm. the Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham or Syria, is very fond of beheading. Some years ago, I wrote an article on this topic. So I've done a lot of interviews on this topic, for instance, and beheadings are clearly in two different passages of the Quran enjoined by Muslims upon what they call non-believers, that is, anyone that's not a Muslim. There's also some good stuff. There is no other world religion on the planet that explicitly mentions Jesus besides the New Testament except for the Quran.
What is the life of a Muslim? What is life all about? What is life and death all about when it comes to Islam?
Well, it's very legalistic. One achieves salvation if one does, because it is never up to one. One can never be assured of salvation. In the final analysis, once you die and judgment comes, Allah will decide. If you follow Islamic law, if you follow the other strictures, you know, pray five times a day, the so-called five pillars of Islam, pray five times a day, fast during Ramadan, make the Hajj once in your life if you can, give alms or zakat to the poor, if you do these legalistic mechanisms, basically, you will hopefully please Allah enough that you will go to heaven and not to hell.
What is life like in the cultures in parts of the world where Islam is the predominant religion? What is
No nation that is a majority Muslim, I should say, has ever really disestablished Islam as the religion, except for Turkey. And for people that don't have any strong religious beliefs themselves, Islam can certainly be very appealing. It's very simple. You know, God is one. There's no Trinity. You know, all you have to do is say La ilaha illa Allah wa Muhammad Rasulullah three times. There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his messenger three times, and you're a Muslim. You know, you don't have to learn those long creeds that we have on Sunday. Certainly, you don't have to ever wade through the Athanasian Creed. So it's very simple in many ways. I think it also appeals to a certain mindset, and I don't think this is paranoid to say this. I think it's safe to say that, particularly in the public schools in the West, that Christianity has been getting the short end of the stick for decades. I mean, again, I taught college history. I reviewed certainly high school history textbooks sometimes for publishers. And it was clear that, you know, for instance, you often would get the worst view of Christianity presented. Christianity, the Crusades, you know, people just, a lot of it is just frankly ignorance. They fall for this. I blame two people, Voltaire and Marx. I mean, the left takes their cues, if you go back far enough, And not that this was all bad, but Voltaire's idea of, you know, not forcing someone to be a religion because the state is that religion. And, you know, that sort of idea in the Enlightenment ultimately was part of our founding in this country, where we divorced, we did not have an official religion at the federal level. But then that gets compounded for many on the left as you come up through the 19th century and the early 20th century with Marx, who was, I think it's safe to say, much more even openly hostile to Christianity. And on the left, and, you know, by that I mean capital L left, not necessarily the, you know, the Democrat that works on the assembly line, but I mean the hard L-left ideologue types, many of whom write curricula and teach in our schools, they think that Christianity, to go harken back to what I said a bit earlier, Christianity is the only Christian civilization and the Christian church, the only entities that are ever oppressive and colonial and all that sort of thing. Basically, one of the tenets, one of the primary tenets of higher education, again, which is dominated by the left, is that basically our religions more or less teach the same thing. You know, this we see this all the time in the media, in the President of the United States making speeches. You know, Islam is a religion of peace. I'm like, really? Have you actually read that book? And of course, people will come back and say, well, but the, like Combs did with me, but the Old Testament, this, that, and the other. And I said, well, and I would say, of course, but there's not a global movement of long-bearded Orthodox rabbis seeking to impose the Torah on you at the point of a sword. There is, however, a global movement of Muslim guys, many of which have long beards, seeking to impose Islam on you at the point of a sword. So, you know, don't deny reality. Some people will take umbrage when you will say Islam is different. And the best you can do is just, you know, try to be informed and then, you know, politely try to correct those views.
To speak the truth and speak the truth in love. I'm Andy Bates.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@kfuo.org.